Today with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. I hope you missed us because we missed you. Well, we kind of missed you. We were out getting a little bit of sun on our backs, watching various forms of motorsport, not necessarily rallying. We feel like we've cheated on you a little bit, but there was rally people involved in both instances. Ryan was getting a little bit of sun on his bits, which is an image you probably really didn't want, over in sunny Barbados. I was over on the Isle of Man watching Mark Higgins drive a very, very quick Subaru around the island and watching some absolute lunatics on motorbikes doing 180 mile an hour. What were you doing, Jack?
I went to the DMOT Carlisle Stages Rally on Saturday, and I spent last Tuesday in the LAT archive looking at some pictures for some retro features we got coming up in the next few months at MN, so pretty cool couple of days, actually.
There you go. And what were you doing, Ryan?
Well, I've just been basically sunning myself, as you just said. No, I've been out in Barbados, out here watching Rally Barbados, and then had a bit of a holiday as well.
It's all go. It's a tough old world that Ryan Champion, man of mystery, actually revolves in. But we have got you from Barbados. I'm guessing the connection isn't always going to be great, but we are going to bear with Ryan's connection, which sounds really wrong, but we'll bear with it anyway. We don't know. Have you heard any news? Have you been been oblivious to any rally news, or have you been keeping up to date as you normally
do? I've vaguely kept in touch as Wi-Fi's allowed. I was watching the results from WRC at the weekend, and I've generally tried to keep in touch with Twitter and see what's going on.
Perfect. Well, good. Well, before we go any further, we're going to talk a little bit about Barbados a little bit later on. But as ever at this point of the programme, we always go to the headlines, because the man who makes some, along with the highly esteemed David Evans, is Jack Bennion, and we are very privileged to have him with us. You see, I'm giving you a positive build-up here, Jack. I hope you like it. I know. Oh, you can tell him after something, can't you?
It's unusual.
Sorry? I know, well, you know, we've had a little bit of a holiday, we're a bit more relaxed now, so we thought, you know, we'll come back with that kind of relaxed
attitude. Speak to yourself, I haven't had a holiday.
Well, Rye's been in that kind of Barbados feel, I've been out on the Isle of Man, you know, we've both been on islands of some sort, and, you know, Rye and I are a bit more relaxed, so maybe you need a little bit of a holiday. But anyway, before you go away on holiday, we need to talk to you about what's going on in this week's MN, and quite interesting, the image that I'm looking at, because I did a little bit of a Google as well, of looking at the Citroën test car. Now, you guys have got a headline coming up with regards to Meek and Breen in test in C3 in Finland. Obviously, this is the new Citroën C3. The livery that it's running reminds me of something that people put in the bottom of drawers in order to line them. Bit of a flowery feel to it, but still, tell us about this.
Yeah, you've done a pretty good job with that headline, haven't you? We've got Chris Meek and Craig Breen testing the new car in Finland. Obviously, I guess most people refer to Finland as kind of the home of rallying, and it's nice to see the car out there. Don't think it was on Emporia exactly, but you know, it's testing through the Finnish roads, and the guys feel like they've made a real step forward with the car in terms of the aerodynamics and a few other parts that are going to be new for 2017. So it looks like Citroën are making some good steps forward, and nice to see Chris and Craig getting a chance to drive the car as well.
Right, interesting one, this slightly left field, but I noticed on Sardinia, and we're of course going to talk about Sardinia very, very shortly, that Jarmo Leitinen was out there, of course, a man we know as Mika Hirvonen's old co-driver. He's now the sporting director of Toyota, but he was out there and he's been talking quite a lot about drivers and drivers that are coming through, and you know, how exciting it is. You just wonder whether the guys that are sat obviously in the Citroën, obviously Craig is very much the new boy there. Chris is very much having the team moulded around there. You kind of feel all this stuff that Craig's doing, as well as obviously the limited programme that he's got, it's not going to do him any harm if he did need to look elsewhere.
It's definitely not going to do him any harm, and obviously we still hear the talk of whether it may be two or back to three cars scoring points next year. And if it suddenly became three cars for all the major teams, then there's going to be a limited number of drivers to go around. So it's definitely good mileage for him. But I would say the fact that he's getting good testing in next year's car bodes pretty well for him being at Citroën next year, do you not think?
Yeah, I suppose I'm just playing devil's advocate just a little bit. It's kind of strange to see Citroën without a Frenchman. I think that's what I'm struggling with. Maybe it's just me and history and everything else. I just find it really difficult to comprehend that they won't have a Frenchman in that car.
Well, you know, they've always got young drivers coming through. Obviously, Sebastian Lefebvre is a French-speaking driver and on their books, and I'm sure Citroën always have drivers coming through as well. So wouldn't be surprised if there's a champion from their One Mate program joins the team as well pretty soon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, it's nothing I've heard or anything like that. I just, you know, you just want to see Craig. I suppose it's like what Chris did. Chris kind of persevered, and now here we are. And as I say, I just want to see Craig kind of have that same opportunity. But I did find it quite interesting, the fact that Jarmo Leighton was quite vocal. I don't know if you'd heard anything about that, Jack. He seems to be quite vocal about different young drivers coming through and possibly, you know, people that they might consider.
Yeah, Toyota program's always, from the start, has been quite involved with young drivers, hasn't it? And has always been open to giving them a chance. You know, we've read a bit about Cali Rovanperä, Harry's son, very, very young and getting a chance to drive a car in at some point in testing. So I think they're an outfit that are very much open to bringing young drivers through. And going back to Craig, I mean, you know, look how many people who've actually driven the 2017 cars so far in testing. You know, we've seen Lapler and OJ do a couple of runs, but nothing too significant. So really, Craig and Chris have done more running a 2017 car than probably any other current drivers out there. Obviously, Granholm's done a lot of the VW and Dieter Deppin has as well. But, you know, in terms of current drivers, Craig's well up there in terms of seat time. So, yeah, good to see for him, and bodes well for his next year, I think.
Absolutely. Anyway, listen, I want to crack on. And one headline that I kind of seen it kind of happen over the weekend. I've seen it pop through on social media and stuff, as these things do these days. But one that kind of took me back just a little bit with regards to Prokhorov withdraws from WRC. Tell us a little bit about that one, Jack.
Interesting story, this one, isn't it? It's one that came out actually pretty much before the event. The FIA released some of the papers that were involved. But yeah, it's a difficult one to explain in a short period of time. But basically, Prokhorov's mechanic have broken the seal on a, I think it was a rear differential. And they've broken some FIA regulations, and Jarmo Mahonen's given us a few lines about how he thinks maybe the regulation might need changing, and Prokop's not very happy with how the whole situation was handled, because he felt like he was doing what he was told to do by the scrutineers. So a bit of a difficult situation, and I think the fine was, and the punishment was maybe a little bit unfair, but you know, the rules are there for a reason, and they're not there to be broken, they're there to be adhered to. So it's a difficult one to fall down on either side really, I think.
Right, I've read a few bits and pieces about this, and I think he'd actually done something similar on Portugal and said, you know, it was okay to go. Where are you with this one?
I sort of have some sympathy for Prokhorov on this one, because let's face it, we don't see many privateers in the World Rally Championship. He's supported the World Rally Championship for over 10 years now, and he's one of the few privateers that has constantly run a front running car, and the World Championship needs privateers. You know, we want depth to the entry, and he's not doing a full program, so I think in some ways that should probably change how he's treated to a certain degree. And like you say, I think the team's mechanics had done a similar thing for Portugal, and no penalty was applied, and then this time round they decided to give him a 5-minute penalty, at which point he might as well not do the rally. And I think the last thing the WRC wants to do is frighten privateers off. And he hasn't got the resources of the factory teams. He hasn't got the same number of transmissions available to him. And they're saying that they needed to rebuild it between events. So, obviously we don't know the full picture, but I think the last thing the WRC needs is to be chasing off people who are strong supporters.
Is my concern, boys, that, you know, I think we're all in agreement that the WRC is getting back to a place of strength. You know, it seems a long time ago now where, you know, we only had Ford and Citroën, and, you know, it was always, it felt like it was last minute that Ford were going to stay in and things like that. And you know, those days are behind us now. Obviously, the Ford program, now M Sport, very different thing. But, you know, we've got other manufacturers coming in, things like that. Are we getting to this thing where maybe there's an elitism about it, where, you know, as you say, you know, back then they would have cut off the right arm to have more privateers, where now, you know, privateers are now being made to suffer. And that's a concern that I've got. I don't know what you boys think, but that's a concern I've got anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It's a fine line to tread, isn't it? I think that we also need to be very careful moving forward about how we deal with privateers, because, you know, you just said, you know, the WRC is riding a bit of a crest of a wave, and we've got a lot of manufacturers involved. But if a couple of them pull out, you know, you do need to rely on the extra entries. I think looking forward to 2017, we've talked a lot about whether certain drivers will be allowed to drive the cars and stuff like that. You know, I think we're going to struggle to get privateers in 2017, because they're going to struggle to get hold of 2017 cars. And if they can't drive the quickest cars, and maybe they're going to look elsewhere, you know. Prokop's doing a lot of other stuff at the minute with his, you know, his Dakar programs and stuff like that, and he's been tempted away. There's no reason why some of the other privateers might be tempted to go and do something else as well. So I think WRC needs to be very careful about how privateers are handled and how the situation's looked at over the next couple of years, definitely.
Right, I don't know what you think. Is there an danger of that, you know, the those at the top almost having an arrogance here that you know, we're not really that fussed anymore?
I think it's more a case of the rules and regulations are written towards the WRC teams, aren't they? And like any sport, when you get major manufacturers in there, that's what the rules and regulations are written around, to restrict these teams, to limit costs, to limit the resources they need, etc., etc. And when you've got private entries running maybe the same cars, the rules and regulations maybe don't always fit in the same manner. And yes, I think inherently WRC, it puts the manufacturers first. They unfortunately are the, well, maybe not unfortunately, but they are the priority. You know, we've got to be in a position where the sport welcomes everybody with open arms and doesn't restrict them.
Absolutely. Now, I can't help but feel like, Jack, there's a headline here that's been specifically tailored for me to actually read it out. And I know you're getting quite excited because you've probably figured out which headline it is already. It is. I'm going to go for it. I don't care. I'm going to put them on the table. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go Mao Qing Hao is to make rally debut in China. How good's that?
You went far off, mate. You went far off.
Go on, Jack. Educate
Mao Qing Hao.
Close.
Very close. I'm impressed. To be fair, I think from my memory of watching the Touring Car Championship, he's referred to as Mar, so I think you can get away with just calling him Mar if that works for you.
Okay, yeah, I can go with that. Now, this is for the uninitiated, I guess, you know, we're all rally fans and everything else, but we know you're a rounded motorsport fan in every sense of the word. I don't mean that from a physical point of view. I mean from a knowledge point of view, of course, Jack. But I'm talking, this is a new name to me. Is this a new name with regards to rallying? There doesn't appear to be much background, but Mads Osberg's dad has got involved with this. Tell us a little bit about this story.
Yeah, so if you don't know Mark Greenhart, or Mar as he's well known, he was a Citroën factory driver in the World Touring Car Championship. He partnered Jose Maria Lopez and Ivan Muller and Sebastian Loeb at Citroën. I'm sure everyone will know Sebastian Loeb, and hopefully Ivan Muller, who's an Andros Trophy champion and quite well known in rallying as well. He's going to be doing Rally China in a WRC car. We're not quite sure what the car will be yet. As you said, Morten Osberg, who's Mads Osberg's dad, is the sort of adapter. I think, I don't know if it's his official title, but he's kind of the team principal, and he's looking to source the car for it.
Are we surprised, and I guess I'll throw this out there, are we surprised? Obviously, you know, it's good that Osberg Senior is got involved, but is there a need to be talking to other manufacturers? We kind of thought the Osberg kind of tie-up was quite M-Sport based. You know, are we surprised that there's other manufacturers
being
spoken to?
Maybe, like I said, you know, he's a factory Citroen driver, so maybe that's where the kind of barrier's coming in. Maybe Mars expected to drive a Citroen and Mads wants him to drive an M Sport car, maybe. You know, we're not too sure on that yet. As I said, they're still in talks to find a car, so we're not quite sure about that yet, but we're sure we'll find out soon.
Okay, now I want to come back to New Zealand, hopeful of getting a WRC inclusion with a candidate event, because I want to talk about calendars very, very shortly. I just want to crack on to a couple of other bits and pieces before we go any further. And by the way, Jack, I hope you've got your any other business ready for this week. I hope you're kind of a bit sharper than what you normally are, because you always claim to be on your back foot.
Not always sharp. With your any other business. I've revolutionised the any other business game since I became on it.
Ryan, can you hear this?
It's taking over the show, Tony. You know, it's slowly taking over.
I know, actually. you know, I invite him in. I like Jack. Let's get Jack involved. You know, he's a good guy and everything else. All of a sudden, he's laying claim to features.
Like,
revolutionising.
Revolutionising. I feel very Alan Partridge saying this, by the way. It was more evolution, not revolution. That's what I'll say. That's all I'll say. But anyway, listen. I want to kind of bring things a little bit closer to home. Again, a man that I always talk to, and he's been on the program a while ago, but I've not had him for ages, and I'd love to have him on because I normally never get to do an interview with him in one take, whether it's been for TV or whether it's been for radio. It always turns into about 15 takes. A BRC regular this year who seems to kind of pick and choose what he's doing a little bit more now is Martin McCormack, who's going to Ypres, and he's taking that gorgeous sounding Skoda Super 2000. What can you tell us about that deal,
Jack?
Yeah,
well, Marty's he's going to miss the Scottish and the Nicky Griss rounds of the British Rally Championship, and Scottish because it will be clashing with Ypres, so he's heading out to Ypres instead. He went out there last year and he finished 7th or 8th in the S2000 car, so good result from him. And you know, he's proved himself to be very, very quick in the BRC this year. He's had a bit of bad luck on the first round in Mid Wales, where his I think it's differential seized before the event and he couldn't start, but he's gone very well since then, and he was actually leading the BRC element of the Circuit of Ireland before he retired from that. So he's had some very good results, and just not quite the luck to get the actual results overall. So hopefully he'll do a bit better going out to Ypres for his second time in this car.
Yeah, I was just about to say this concern's coming in, right? And I don't know whether it's unfair of me to connect this to Marty, but I think across the board that this change is going to happen on the Nicky Griss stages. You know, on paper it's a fantastic concept. You know, a day of gravel, day of tarmac. There's a 3-hour turnaround to get the cars into some kind of switch specification. That's all very well and good for big teams, isn't it? That 3-hour turnaround.
Yeah, it is. I mean, having said that, I would say that, you know, all the cars at this level have got good preparation behind them. Everybody's got the tarmac and gravel kit. It you know, adds an element of interest to it. I like the idea. I like the concept of it. I think inherently we're getting to the time of year where we are seeing people fall out of the British Championship, which we knew would happen. We knew that, you know, the amount of fantastic cars at the start of the year, it just doesn't continue. If everybody can't win, and those that don't win and those that have problems eventually drop out, don't they? And I don't know, I like the idea of one day on gravel, one day on tar. It's unusual. Let's see how it works.
Yeah, as I say, it's just more of a, you know, for us it's a very, very simple switch. We are doing Nicky Griss. That sounds wrong. We are doing a Nicky Griss rally, and yeah, as I say, it's a half hour switch around for us at best. He says suction wood, but if you encounter a problem during the course of the day, then that's where you're up against it as a very, very small kind of amateur team. If you've got problems to sort out as well as doing a switch over, I think that could put everybody under a little bit of pressure, really.
I also think that the mechanics would probably thrive on that a little bit. You know, it's funny the amount of mechanics you talk to now around the World Championship Service Park that actually miss the you know, the interaction they used to have with the car, the roadside servicing, the excitement that used to happen. You know, now they sit around all day and wait for the car to come, have 20 minutes of madness, and then nothing for a few hours again. So I don't know. I think ask your mechanics, Tony. I think they'll enjoy it.
I've already asked them and they don't enjoy it.
is that just service for you though?
I think it's just servicing for me, if truth be told, but still, there you go. We'll crack on. Now, listen, I want to get to, obviously, we weren't here last week, so we missed quite a lot of information with regards to that came out last week. Now, I want to talk calendars. It's something we threatened to talk about. I don't want to get too bogged down here because I think we could do probably just an hour on that. But Rally for Wales could take over Rally Repairs. Now, Jack, this is something you've been heavily covering, and the reason why I want to go to this because I want to talk about Chester, which is now going to be part of the showcase of it's not called Wales Rally GB anymore, is it? It's got Day Insure. I do apologise if you are listening to guys from Day Insure, but if you want to sponsor the Rally podcast, please let me know. Anyway, Day Insure. Yeah, you know, so Chester's involved, but you know, one big thing that has been concerns around the world, and we've discussed this before, is what's going on with the stages in Wales. And just tell us a little bit about this headline, Jack. Rally for Wales could take over Rally Repairs.
Yeah, so Rally for Wales is something, like you say, we've been covering quite a lot over the past couple of months. It's basically a campaign that's hoping to to bring awareness about the situation that's going on in rallying in Wales at the minute. As it works at the minute, the body looks after motorsport in the UK, the Motorsports Association, or the MSA, make a deal each year with National Resource Wales, who are a government body that looks after the forests in Wales. Unfortunately, those two bodies haven't been able to agree a deal for next year and well, for currently, actually, because the deal ran out on June the 1st, or actually after that June the 1st deadline now. So currently there's no deal in place that allows rallying to happen on NRW land in Wales. So a proposal that's been put forward by the Rally for Wales, which is a campaign that's been promoting the issue between the two, is that they want to take over repairing and preparing roads for rallies that happen on NRW land. So how it would work is basically, instead of the MSA paying the NRW for the land and for the NRW to repair the land after rallying's finished, the MSA will pay Rally for Wales instead, and they will look after the land, and theoretically NRW will give the to the MSA to use for rallying for free. So it's basically someone else preparing the roads, and it's a not-for-profit organisation doing it. So they're hoping that everyone wins in this situation, because it also means NRW's deficit will be a lot lower than it is as well.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Right, I don't know whether you've been following this story. Obviously, you've been away. It does continually seem to be evolving, and I think there's more to come out on this story tomorrow. Are we going to find a happy solution? You know, are people going to be able to come in and sort these stages out, and they are going to allow private contractors, which you see NRW just getting the money from the government and just basically cracking on? If that happens, by the way, that's going to be an absolute nightmare for the whole of rally, and I think moving forward in the UK.
Well, let's hope that we need to find a solution, so let's hope we can. Often private contractors have worked on Forestry Commission roads anyway, and I think actually if you have somebody who knows what they're doing in terms of preparing roads for rallying and repairing roads after a rally, that would be brilliant. Funnily enough, I was recently speaking to John Bennett Evans, who owns a Sweet Lamb testing complex in Wales, and you know, he hasn't seen an increase in his cost repairing the roads. He knows what he's doing with his own roads in there, and hasn't really had any problems over the years doing that. So I think if we see a specialist company doing it, it would be probably the best solution. But whether that's agreeable to all parties, we'll have to wait and see.
Fingers crossed. Now, guys, we talk about Chester. For the guys who listen to the podcast, obviously you don't get MN Jack. Just tell us a little bit about how synonymous this whole new venture of going into Chester is going to be for what was the final round, of course, of the World Rally Championship. It's not now, it's the penultimate round of the World Rally Championship. Just tell our listeners elsewhere in the world, perhaps, just how synonymous this place is.
Chester's got a long and rich rallying history. It's been the home of Rally GB or the Lombard RAC or the RAC Rally, whatever you want to call it, from over the past few years. The clock's one very famous part of Chester that is always been synonymous with the rally, and also synonymous in the country, actually. I think it's the second most, bit of information here for you guys, the second most photographed clock in the UK. There you go. How's that?
Wow.
Did you say clock?
I said clock.
Yeah, okay, just checking. Okay, go on, crack on.
So basically Chester's gonna be back in Wales Rally GB. Sorry, I had to gather myself up there, Tony. It's gonna be a
hopefully not much.
it's gonna be a week long rallying festival, I think they're calling it. Bryn Walker is obviously someone we know quite well, who's behind the whole thing, and they'll have the pre-rally auction that they always have. I know you were there last year, Ryan. That's gonna be at Chester Racecourse, and then there's the whole thing is gonna culminate with a regroup on Friday in the middle of Chester, underneath this famous clock. So yeah, quite synonymous and nice to have Chester back, I think.
Yeah, I know there's a few other people behind that deal as well. A guy in rallying, and I don't think it's fair of me to say his name, because I think I don't think it's common knowledge yet. But he is basically one of the guys that's involved with the Duke of Westminster, which I think is how this has come about. But still, as I say, good news for Rally GB, and I suppose that barrier now that the events have to stay in Wales? Okay, it's not okay. We've got a competitive stage as such, which is a spectator stage, which is going to Shumley Castle.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're visiting Shumley Castle as a spectator stage, which replaces. That's the one. Which I've never enjoyed that stage anyway, truth be told. But it doesn't really matter because I'm off the Umrally GB this year, so unfortunately. But still, there you go. But yeah, as I say, it's great. It's great that there's stuff going on. But anyway, we were talking about calendars the other week, and Ryan. Very, very forcefully pointed out that he wants to do calendars this week, which obviously means Ryan's done his homework and he's been kind of sat there going, when are you going to ask us about calendars? When are you going to ask us about calendars? I got this ready 3 weeks ago and you still haven't done the calendars feature. So, Ryan Champion, as it's your
far
baby,
from it. I just didn't
calendar.
Want to be caught out by not doing it. That was my
question. Yeah. Well, this comes on the back, as I say, I mentioned, there's a headline this week in MN. With regards to New Zealand possibly getting a calendar event. Perhaps we should start there, Jack. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's they seem to be putting a lot of investment in and taking this very seriously to New Zealand. They've made Hayden Padden an ambassador of the event, and they're having a candidate event, which is going to happen very soon, where hopefully Oliver Chasler from the WRC is going to go and evaluate the event. They're not so happy that they're not getting that rotation with Australia that they supposedly should have had for a few years. So they're hoping to force their way back onto the calendar as quickly as possible, and they're hoping that this brilliant calendar event that they've set up is the way to do it.
So, Ryan, taking all that into account, I feel like we should have signed it kind of like some of the Pops drums at this point, but we can't, so we won't. But talk us through where your calendar would start and finish and why those events are in there.
Well, I think we should start with Monte Carlo. I think it's established in world rallying. Everybody loves the event. Everybody knows of the Monte Carlo rally, and I think that's certainly an important place to start. I think it's just the traditional season opener, and I don't think that should change. And same with Sweden, really. Sweden follows it up very quickly, as a winter rally, and I think that fits very well. Now, bearing in mind this is our ideal calendar of where we'd like to go next, I'd like to see another winter rally in. I think there should be a second winter rally, and
the Arctic rally is around that time.
Yeah, but I'm going to go left field. I'm going to go for one in North America.
Wow.
We need to go to America sooner or later. We need to be in North America. We know it's not a big rallying territory, but if we want to be a world championship, we should aim for North America, and I'm putting a second winter rally in North America. There you go, bang.
Go on, whereabouts in North America? I'll work out the logistics on this.
Right,
now.
Well, I'm willing to talk logistics after that, and then the car can probably go to the cars, because then I was thinking Mexico and Argentina after that.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. North America. Yeah.
Then literally Mexico and Argentina, again, established rallies, very strong rallies. How many events are we allowed, by the way, at this point?
Well, at the moment, there is there's 16,
14.
Isn't there?
1, 14. 2, yeah, 14, 14.
Sorry, yeah.
There's 14, and I think I'm on 15 at the minute. But anyway.
Well, no, you're not. You're basically on Sweden, yeah. North America, Mexico, Argentina. Where do we go after Argentina?
On my list that I've got in front of me, I'm going to be on 15. But the one that I haven't quite found the right slot in terms of logistics of moving cars around, but it might need a unique car anyway, is the Safari Rally. So I would love to see some form of, obviously, Safari quite close to my heart, having been and done that a couple of times, and an incredible challenge, always brought fantastic images to the World Championship. It was always the event the Japanese manufacturers wanted to win. You know, as we saw with Toyota putting massive time and effort into that rally, and then Mitsubishi likewise in the later years, and I'd love to see Safari back in. So I think that would...
Okay, so we've got Safari. Now, taking into account, and Jack, by all means, give me a shout when you're ready, but after Argentina, we go Portugal. Are we keeping Portugal?
Yeah, I've gone quite traditional here. I've got Portugal, Corsica, Catalonia, and San Remo back as the Italian round. Bringing it
bringing it back to the mainland, split between tarmac and gravel as it used to be. Again, we just had this conversation, but brings a great challenge. And he always had, again, amazing images from San Remo. It had the traditional tarmac stages around there, and then he went to the fabulous dusty backdrop of Tuscany, which was an amazing backdrop for world rallying. So I would love to see it back in Tuscany as well.
Here's the thing, and Jack, I'm going to bring you in now as well, is that the next round that's listed, which obviously it is literally the next round of WRC, which is Poland, which is going to be a fresh event. It's a fresh set of eyes on WRC, which is what people are trying to bring in. And right, while I take on board everything you say, what we're doing, we're recovering old ground. Are we just tapping into old rally fans? Surely we need to be going to new places for new people to see.
Well, at the minute, we're on my calendar, so this is where I want to go.
All right, sorry. All right, fine. Jeez. Okay, sorry. Right. Jack, sit down. We're not going to get a word in. Right, okay, so we go to, after Italy then, which would be your San Remo, we go to Poland. Are we going to Poland?
Poland's not in my calendar at the minute.
Okay, and Poland's not in your calendar,
and to
right.
be honest, Ireland is my number one reserve, which I haven't quite found a slot for yet, but...
Right, okay, and then we go to Finland?
You have to have Finland in there, don't you? But then, you know, just thinking about the new markets, I think we all know China should be in. China in an ideal world, as long as the rally runs this year, it's got to be in the championship. Just from a point of view of it as an emerging car market, it's very difficult to leave that out, as we all know nowadays. And then, you know, and then we come to... I think the Middle East, again, we used to see a fantastic rally in Jordan. Again, thinking about this world championship, it would be great to see...
That is the place as opposed to the person.
Yes, that is the place.
Yeah, okay, just checking.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, flat over crests and all that, yeah.
Absolutely. Double caution.
But I think Jordan did put on a great WRC rally. The drivers loved the stages. It's probably the one area in the Middle East that can provide great stages as opposed to, you know, being more sandy desert type stages. So I think that's, you know, that'd be great to see Jordan back as a Middle East round. Australia, New Zealand, where do we go to with those two? Does rotation work for them both? Obviously, it'd be great to see both in the championship. I guess, you know, whether the logistics of that working for them are possible or not, I certainly think we'd love to see New Zealand back in the championship. Yes, it's going over all ground, but fantastic support for WRC New Zealand, as we've seen with this latest campaign. They've got a front running driver now in WRC, so you know, that's quite an important one, I think, that we do get back out there. But is it sustainable to do Australia and New Zealand every year with all these other rallies coming in? I'm just not sure on that one. GB to me is a fantastic one as a finish to the season. But the other one that, again, you know, thinking about going forwards, do we go back to Japan? If we're going to see Toyota come back in, we might see a push to go back to Japan. And again, if you're going to have Japanese manufacturers in there, that's something they may want to see in the future. So again, it's very, very difficult to narrow this down to.
I started writing these down, and I'll be honest with you, I've gave up writing them down now, because for basically you're saying countries and then go, yeah, but probably shouldn't go there. I thought you were going to give us your calendar. I thought I have pretty much,
but these are discussion points as well. Well, go for that, both of you. Japan, in or out, going forward with Toyota?
I would say...
In an ideal world.
Controversially... I think it's a very similar scenario to New Zealand, Australia, having China in Japan.
Yeah, maybe.
For me, it's in terms of world car markets and stuff like that, it's got to be China. And I think doing China and Japan in one calendar wouldn't be beneficial to the championship. So for me, it'd be China over Japan.
There you go. I'm with Jack on that.
Just a discussion point. I didn't have it in my calendar, but it was a discussion point.
Of course you didn't. Is there anything else you haven't got in your calendar that we can discuss?
I didn't have Japan in there, but I was a thought. And it would be nice to go to Ireland, but again, you know, is the space for it? Let's see.
Oh, okay. Is that your final answer?
That's where I've got to, yeah.
I feel what we still haven't covered the rally yet, by the way, the weekend. We need to be conscious of the fact that we need to do Italy very, very quickly, even though it seems wrong to say that because we've done so much other stuff. Jack, be gentle. How far away from you? How far away from your calendar was that one?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't far off. There's only three events that would be on mine that weren't on Ryan's. So I can talk as long as Ryan has for my calendar, but there's only three events.
Right, go on, tell me the three events.
The three events I had were the proper Acropolis.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. It would circuit.
Go Safari well.
Yeah, exactly. the circuit, I think, is one that I, just from a personal point of view, I'd, if it was my calendar, I'd have to have it on there. Preferably a full proper circuit like it used to be in the 80s, but even this year's circuit was brilliant, I thought. And also Indonesia, I don't think was mentioned there, and that's one I'd like to do.
See, the only time I remember Indonesia was, funnily enough, playing the Colin McRae game on the PlayStation, the very first one. And Indonesia was always a horrible, horrible rally to do. That's all I can remember about
it. And I think when the rally ran, I mean, it did get some torrential rain, didn't it? And when it rained, they were actually using snow tyres there, I think, just to get through those muddy forests.
I must do this, right, and I keep threatening to do this because he's a mate of mine, and I know you have this problem sometimes because he's a really good mate of mine. Gerry Freeman, who was a Pirelli tyre engineer and worked with Colin, and he worked with Richard and stuff like that. He has got amazing stories about Indonesia, and some of the which we could never, ever put in a podcast. But we must get him on because, trust me, some of the tales he's got about going over and doing some of those rallies are phenomenal, and we really should get him. The problem is the podcast will be about 8 hours long.
And the other thing, I think we're up to about 20 rounds of the WRC.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be 30-odd rounds by the time we're done.
Well, I'm going to be controversial. I pull out a South American event, even though I'm doing myself out of a living. I pull out a South American event. I put in the North American event. I agree with what Rye's saying. I think we need to do that. In an ideal world, I'd love to have a safari in. In an ideal world, I'd love to have an Acropolis in. I enjoy going to Greece. I've worked on Greece. I enjoyed it, and it was a good event to be part of. And I think other than that, I think it would be unfair to me to pass any comments on Poland and pass any comments on China. I think we need to go and try these things and see what happens. So I am going to be undecided on my calendar. And the reason why I'm going to be undecided on my calendar, because we really need to cover the rally, boys. We haven't done anything yet on the last round of WRC, of course. We haven't even done a high and high corner. Somebody tweeted us about that the other day, who said high and high corner is going to be interesting this week.
We could each do a Twitter Q&A on our calendars, so if anyone wants to ask any more questions about what events we've got on there, they can ask us on Twitter, and then we can move on.
Ryan is taking over. But it's a great idea. But I'll put it here.
Yeah,
taking over,
I can't see this calendar discussion going on, so yeah, I think it's a good idea.
We will come back to it, and maybe it will become Calendar Corner because we've got Iron Die Corner. So why not?
Love
a new event every week. I think the Three Sisters and Wigan. I think the go kart track. I think it should be run as a candle.
Well, I didn't even get to say that I wanted a 5-day Rally GB to finish off the year. But anyway, there we are.
Yes.
Yes. Can we do Italy now, boys?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, happy days. Right, now, Italy. Because I was away and trying to get information on the island was really, really tricky when I was over on the island, man. It's bizarre. I was saying to Ryan off air about this. So I only really caught up with stuff yesterday. I watched the highlights package and all the videos and stuff like that. I think it was fantastic to see Thierry on the top step. I've spoke quite a bit about concerns for him. I think we all have. Now, that confidence of being able to run in, I suppose, in the manufacturer two team guys, running further down the road, has that been a way of managing him? I'm going to put that to Rye first. Rye, has this kind of been managed for Thierry to gain some confidence?
That started last year, didn't it, with Rally GB putting him in a number 20 car. But it seems whenever Hyundai put the number 20 on their car, it's the most successful one. So I don't know if that's linked to the pressure or what it is, but either way, I think it's just great to see him back on form. You know, brilliant drive all weekend. He had a big battle with Latvala and beat him fair and square. And I think it's just great to see the man back on form, because, like you say, we did have major concerns over his form, and he just didn't. Even if he wasn't point scoring, even if he was in the number 20 car, he still didn't seem to be coming back to form, and yet bang, comes and, you know, wins his second world championship rally. So I just think it's great for the championship going forward. It's great for Hyundai going forward now that, again, they've got a strong player. So let's hope he keeps that confidence, and he should do with a performance like that.
He looked very relaxed. I think that's one thing I will say. I think throughout it, the stage ends and everything else, I suppose you can be relaxed when you've got when you are leading a rally and you seem to be leading it comfortably, Jack. I don't know what, there's not too much come out with regards to win. I think he's very much got his head down. I don't think there's too many interviews. I know he did one interview dedicating the win to, obviously, the people behind his career, Phil Bogowski and one of the guys from Kronos who supported him during his IRC years. But he seemed quite relaxed about everything. I think that's the best way of putting
it. Seemed quite relaxed after the rally. Well, after the rally, actually, I'm sure he would be relaxed because he's just won. But, I mean, yeah, he did, over the course of the weekend, like you say, he did seem quite relaxed in what he was doing. His answers were very sort of, any answers to any questions about the rally were very measured and very sort of low key, if you like. And I think for me, it doesn't really answer many questions, because we kind of knew Nerville has got the pace. We know he's quick enough to win rallies. We've seen it. We saw it in Germany, and we've seen his pace at the front. But what we've not seen from Thierry, and what I think I kind of raised quite a few times about other drivers of the WRC as well, is that level of consistency. And that's why Ogier is the best for me, because even when he's not the quickest, he's on the podium. We've seen it again this weekend. He knew he wasn't going to win the rally, and he's put in another top performance and scored a podium on a difficult rally with difficult road conditions. So, you know, if this raises more questions than answers for me in terms of where Nerville lies in the ranking of WRC drivers. But yeah, good performance over this weekend alone. You can't really take anything away from this weekend.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter @absolute_rally.
Right, I want to bring you in at this point, and again, you know, we talk about confidence and we talk about things moving forward. One man who's kind of gone 360 is Hayden Padman, and he was such a I wanted to give the guy a hug. You know, I seen one interview where he was practically in tears and just wondering where it had all gone wrong. I guess we for just how much of a fine line kind of success and failure is at this level?
Yeah, a fine line, but you know, I think we'll see Hayden back again very quickly. You know, we know he's very confident in himself. He's an incredible performer. I guess at the end of the day as well, his experience is relatively limited at the front of WRC. So, you know, yes, still making the odd mistake, but he'll bounce back from that pretty quick, I'm sure.
I hope so. I guess we kind of have a look through the other runners and riders, I guess, when we start looking at it and we start looking at results. One pleasant thing, I guess, is that, we're at Hyundai corner still. We're talking about Danny Sordo, now currently second in the Drivers' Championship. And, again, just seems to be a man who almost a newfound kind of level of consistency, albeit maybe not quite in the top first or second places, but certainly that third, fourth, fifth area.
Wasn't that always Danny Sordo, though? You know,
I think,
but no, not taking anything away from him, but he's always been Mr. Consistent, hasn't he? I mean, okay, recently maybe he's not been as quick until, you know, finding a bit more form again this year, but he's always been Mr. Consistent year in, year out, and even in his trend days, etc., you know, he was always never far away, but maybe not quite the quickest.
Again, you know, if I think it's just one of those things where, as a point scorer, again, he's that good, solid. I suppose he's back in the realms of that good, solid number two driver, isn't he? You know, that's where you want your number two driver, is kind of picking up the pieces when your lead man is winning, which is what he became so synonymous with when Sebastian Loeb was winning all those championships, that Danny was always there or thereabouts. But are we in the realms now of looking at where the driver standings are, boys? And again, I'm going to come to you, Jack, first. That we look at Jari Matti, and I know he was second and everything else, but you see that kind of fall from grace. And it's a long time since I've seen his name so far down the driver standings.
Yeah, it is quite, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? You know, we talked about Jari Plante, and again this year he's not quite managed to string together a few wins and really put a challenge to Ogier. And you know, he's in the same car, and you know, I think he's scored, have you got the points in front of you there, Tony? I think he's on 56, isn't he?
I think it is, yeah. I haven't got the driver's points in front of me at the moment.
He's on around 55, 56, and OJ's got 132. So, you know, they're in the same car. OJ's running at the front of the road, and to have a deficit that big is obviously not ideal for Jari. But looking at the standings, it's an interesting one. But for me, again, you know, some justifications in terms of who you pick to put in your car. Like you've just talked about Sordo there. I personally think Sordo's comfortably in the top five best drivers of the season so far this year. He's had a couple of poor retirements and mechanical issues that have struck him, but he's scored consistently through the year, and there's a reason why he's second in the standings. You know, you look at Hayden, yes, he had that brilliant win in Argentina, but you know, he struggled in other places, and you know, he's on 57. Is he, you know, what you get from Sordo is that level of consistency, and I really rate that, in especially as your number two driver. He just consistently brings home points pretty much every rally.
But going forward, if you wanted a winner, who are you going to pick, Sordo or Hadley?
That's your question as a team manager, isn't it? Who do you take? You know, obviously, if you want to win a championship, then I guess Hayden's your first choice there. But this is what I was talking about earlier when you're talking about levels of consistency in drivers. It's all good being able to stick a win in once a year, but you've got to be able to put two or three together in order to challenge OJ.
I think you're absolutely right in that there's very few drivers in the championship can perform at that level consistently.
Exactly.
You're exactly right.
Exactly.
Now, one thing that is for sure is that the man who works for Autoglass, local to High End Ice Factory, has just got a massive bill, €50,000. If those of you are not aware, that High End Motorsport was hit with a massive €50,000 fine late on Sunday after admitting fitting the wrong side windows to the Rally's Italia Sardinia winning Thierry Neuville's car. Now, I'll tell you what, that must have been squeaky bum time for the team and for the driver, the fact that obviously they were running under this. I suppose they must have been running under some kind of protest, surely.
I think I was trying to rack my brains on this, and I hadn't done any research on it, but wasn't a team thrown out for illegal side windows a few years back?
But they're too thin. I just remember them being...
I'm pretty sure whether it was M Sport or Citroën, but I think that one of the teams certainly got thrown out over this, and I think they must have been pretty worried and in some ways quite lucky to get away with a fine. I did see, I don't know whether it was fake or real, I did try and have a quick look last night and I couldn't find it, but somebody had done an eBay ad for two rear windows only used once with Neville and his number 20, and they were €50,000 on eBay, but I couldn't actually find them, which was a bit unfortunate.
Well, there's a little bit, I'll expand on the story here, thanks to WRC.com. Who always first, aren't they, with this stuff? Fair play to them. But basically, they accepted there was a mistake on the homologation process. And Nandan explained that the window shown in the homologation form could not be fitted into the rear doors of the finished car. The car was originally presented for inspection with the doors unassembled, and the team did not realise the windows did not fit into them. Stewards were told that the new windows were 17 grams lighter on one side and 19 grams lighter on the other side. I wonder if that's for the driver, co-driver. Anyway, so that's the reason behind it. But €50,000, it could have went completely different, and we could be having a very different conversation in High and Dyke Corner. But so before we move away from High and Dyke Corner, congratulations to Kevin Avering for a sterling job in the old car, obviously getting a stage win, and all being well, a bit later on the podcast, we are going to be talking to Seb Marshall. But yeah, as I say, a cracking drive. I think we all agree, don't we? I think Kevin Avering really did look at home.
He did. Very good performance from both, and yeah, nice after the difficult rally they had previously in Portugal. That they, you know, this was kind of a redeeming performance from Kevin, and also very good score in the new car for them. So good experience on gravel for Kevin as well, because he's very inexperienced on gravel. So more time in the car, very good news for them too.
I just want to go back through to some of the other runners and riders in the top 10, guys, before we move away from this. But obviously Tim Nouvel win the event with Yari Matti second, Sebastian Ogier third, and we've just been talking about Danny Sordo in fourth. Oi Tanak fifth. Are we surprised that Oit was fifth in the DMAC car? Or, you know, I've seen some shots of him coming through running on canvas, and I always wonder how they got down road sections on that, but perhaps we shouldn't highlight it. But I've seen cars running on canvas tyres, you know, down to that, and that wasn't just the DMAC, to be fair, that was the Michelins as well. But are we surprised to see Oit still kind of mixing it, right? Or are we kind of found his level there as well? We've just been talking about Danny finding his.
Yeah, I think, well, again, it comes back to consistency, doesn't it? On speed, he's been around there all year, hasn't he? You know, regularly on day one or day two, we've seen him in fourth, fifth, sixth position. You know, I think he is at that level of speed. It's just, again, he struggled with consistency. But I guess it also shows that the tyres must be working reasonably well against the Michelins now, because he's matching the Works M Sport runners. So, you know, again, showing his speed, but I guess that's always been Tanak's problem through his career, is showing his consistency. And if he could match that speed with this level of consistency, fourth, fifth place, then again, I think we'd see him back in a factory car.
Well, we've just mentioned the M Sport boys. Obviously, Eric Kamali seems probably his best rally, I think it's fair to say. I think he almost had a faster stage time until Kevin Avering put pay to that. But and I think he had one a little bit later on, didn't he? But Jack, Eric's best event, do you reckon?
Yeah, for me, it was definitely his best event. Like you say, you know, a couple of really impressive stage times again. And to be honest, not really, for me, much different than what we've been seeing from him, other than, you know, no crash at the end of it. But, you know, the early pace was pretty much bang on what we've seen from Eric. But what we've seen now over the previous two events is him keeping it on the road for the whole event and patching the whole event together as a performance. So, yeah, another impressive run from Eric, and, yeah, some very impressive times in there as well.
Fair play, Henning Solberg, always there or thereabouts with a cheeky big grin. It's great to see Henning still there. I often wonder how he does it. But I just want to very quickly, guys, before we do our any other business, because we are, time-wise, we're phenomenally over, but anyway, who cares? WRC2 runners, Jan Kopecky, Carl Kruder, and Sunnanen, who respectively the 11th, 10th, 9th, and 8th. Are we going to see, I think Jan Kopecky's kind of been and gone, hasn't he? But are we going to see maybe these other guys maybe getting opportunities elsewhere? Are they good enough?
I think Timo's come from the Orica background that Kamali came from last year, so, you know, he's definitely one to watch. We saw him win WRC2 in GB last year. Timo, very good driver, and he actually won that. He won GB last year in an S2000 Skoda rather than an R5 against some of the guys he was up against. So there's no doubt he's very quick, and I think he's won two of the last three events now. So definitely keep an eye on Timo, because he's somebody who's going to be really. He's definitely pushing himself into the frame for a drive next year, in my opinion.
Right, I don't know what, you know, Carl Kruder seems to have been around a while. He seems to I know he's been he was a guest on a regional programme when we first came back, God, 18 months ago or whatever it must have been now, when he was still working hard. I think he made the switch from the Peugeot, if memory serves, and he went over to the DS. Is he still there or thereabouts in consideration for people, do you think, or is he just a very good privateer now?
That's harsh, isn't it? Saying he's somebody who's a good privateer. He's still a young driver, I guess, still time to develop. But, you know, Sunderland, on the other hand, does seem to be, again, one of these, you know, emerging Scandinavian drivers, the new generation.
I mean that genuinely with the greatest respect. Yeah. But what I mean is that, you know, we seem to be getting this wave of Scandinavians coming in now, you know, Finnish drivers, you know, Lappi and people like that, who seem to have pushed to the head of that queue. And I guess you could even put, you know, Elvin in that category as well. You know, if you're a team manager now looking round, you know, I guess where would he be on the list? I think that's probably where it was going.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. The new wave of Scandinavians that we've got with Lappi, with Sunderland, with Pontus Tiedemann as well, you know, Swedish driver. Then they're the ones that are at the front of the queue now, aren't they? Really, they're the ones that are showing the form and doing very, very well. So I think you've said it there. I think he's maybe been bypassed by those drivers there.
Absolutely right, boys. Before this gets ridiculously over time, we are now quite a while into our podcast for our newsy section. As I say, we are all being well going to have a guest, but watch this space. If we don't have it, don't be surprised, but they will be on next week. But we're going to do any other business, boys. So if you could do yours, Jack, if you got yours ready to go.
I have, absolutely, yeah. Like I said earlier at the start of the show, I was at the DMAT Carlisle Stages Rally on Saturday, and that was the debut of Matt Edwards in an R5 car. If, you know, some of our foreign listeners maybe not familiar with Matt, he's been around national rallying for about 12 years now, and this year he's in the BRC2 category in a Group N Evo 9 Lancer. He was given the chance in a three-way deal between M Sport, DMAC, and a gentleman called Peter Smith, who looks after Swift Caravans in the UK, and they're one of Matt's sponsors, and they managed to put a deal together for him to drive an R5 plus Ford Fiesta on the DMAT Carlisle Stages, which is a BTRD event in this country. Matt did incredibly well, actually. He won the second and third stages of the event after bedding into the car after the first stage. So come service, he was 4 seconds ahead of Desi Henry, who's another British Rally Championship runner, Skoda Fabia R5. So Matt proved himself against some very able drivers, very able machinery. And I think both of you guys will agree that to step into an R5 car on your first pop and be leading a national event is very impressive. Unfortunately, on the fourth stage, there was a bit of a problem with the throttle and Matt went off, and he decided to call the event there after the car had... there was no major damage to the car, but to save braking the car or anything like that, they came to a halt. But yeah, Matt, one of these guys who's been around Group N Lancers for a while, and I guess people in those cars always look up and say, you know, could I do it in the top level machinery? And he stepped up and did that on Saturday, so great to see.
Happy days. Couldn't agree more. How about you, Ray?
Yeah, well, firstly, I agree completely with that. You know, Matt did a fantastic job in the car, and anything he's jumped into, be it Group N, be it Historic Escorts, or now the R5 car, has gone very, very well. So, you know, all credit to him. Any other business this week, as I'm walking around the hotel reception in Barbados, trying to avoid the yellow buses with the Dixie horns going past as they each go past the window, is a quick report from Rally Barbados. Great fight at the front of the field between
don't move away too much, because you're starting to drop off now, so don't ruin it, right?
I haven't moved far, but okay. The reception is getting busy, so I've gone the other side of a door. Simon John Joseph, former Factory Ford driver, you know, he was Colin McRae's teammate. Some fantastic footage of him in the French Championship a few years back. He was in a fight with Jamaican driver Jeffrey Panton, both in Ford Focuses. They had a big battle at the front, and Panton eventually came out as the winner, as Simon John Joseph had a couple of problems, punctures, and then eventually a diff problem put him out. But fantastic drive from Jeff Panton, who came over to do Rally GB a couple of times in Salikas in the late 90s, and then Elvin brought the R5 car, so he very, very well all weekend in the R5 car, but just outgunned on the fast stages here by the World Rally cars. But all credit to him, he got third at the end of it.
Fair play, and we are starting to lose you now. I'm going to do my own other business, and my own other business, again, we've got the rule, which I think Ray brought in, was the fact that it's rally related, because I was absolutely astounded by Mark Higgins' performance in the Subaru, which ProDrive built for him to go around the TT course. I was there, obviously. The bikes are fantastic, and it is truly, you know, it is truly an amazing spectacle. If you've never been to a road racing event like that, go and experience it. But it did have a different twist to it with the fact that the Manxman Mark Higgins actually went and took this thing that ProDrive built for him, and it was just a missile on wheels. And there's plenty of footage. We put some footage out on our Facebook page. Take a look at that. I was a pal of mine who was sat very close to me. He took that footage, and there's plenty of footage out there. Go and take a look at it, because it is a phenomenal feat. And I think there's not, I won't be the only one that takes a look at it and you forget how good a driver that Mark Higgins is. You know, he's doing his stunt work and everything else now, but there's got to be a car for Mark to come and do some BRC rounds again, because I think genuinely he would upset a fair few people. I really believe that.
I couldn't agree more.
That's my any other business, guys. So it's at that junction now, folks, where it's a bit of a funny one. If by chance you do hear another little bit of an interview, hopefully we're going to have Seb Marshall, but we're trying to catch him. He's in the middle of doing some PR stuff at the moment and everything for Hyundai, or Hyundai, depends where you're from. We're going to try and catch up with him and maybe lob something on the end of this podcast. But if not, we thank you for the download. It is good to be back. And as I say, we have got some quite unique things that are going to be coming up over the next couple of weeks with guests. We realise this one's been very news heavy, and it's been us just back and forth talking about stuff. But again, if you want to get involved with the calendar thing, by the way, absolute_rally, you know where we live and everything else. So boys, right, you better go and get packed, because you need to go and catch a flight.
I do. Got to go back and hopefully find a Subaru, a dusty Subaru somewhere, clean it off and take it to Goodwood.
Of course. Funny enough, I was talking to the gentleman whose workshop your car was in only the other day.
Flying the car back from Barbados, I would imagine.
No, it's not. It's coming back sea freight, that one.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yeah. No, there was no budget to put it. We flew it. It was only going to come back sea freight. You know,
you
know what New York human are like. He was never going to pay you all that money, but still, there you go. There you go. So, Jack, thank you so much, mate. Same time, same place next week.
No problem. See you next week. Thank you very much.
And it's been a pleasure. And all being well, folks, we will now cross over to talk to Seb Marshall.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, Marshall or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. And we've got the extra piece. We managed to track him down. We thought we weren't going to get him, but we have got him as part of this week's podcast. Seb Marshall, congratulations and welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi Tony, hi Jack, thank you very much, thank you.
Well, you see, we forget that you and Jack have been colleagues, media lovey colleagues of late, and obviously Jack was the man in the studio and you were the stage M reporter, of course, on the wonderful circuit of Ireland. I suppose there's a relief of being back in a rally car as opposed to talking to Jack in a studio.
I mean, the opportunity that came up to work with Jack and John Desborough and Trevor Agnew and all the other guys at the Circuit of Ireland live stream coverage was fantastic. I really enjoyed doing my piece at the end of the stages there, seeing the reaction of the drivers, and yeah, it was something I've wanted to do for a little while and thoroughly enjoyed it. But yeah, like you say, I mean, co-driving is where my heart is, and being back in the car competing recently has really been a great experience after a bit of a while out, really.
You don't want to be getting sucked into these media lovies. They're all the same. Trust me.
He's got the best of both worlds now. He's talking to me in a studio after just doing a rally. It's perfect.
I suppose it is, yeah. I'll tell you what. Now I know, Seb, you do listen to our podcast because you may reference right at the top as his work experience boy going to be with us as well, which by the way, he reminds me of that comment on practically a daily basis via text message. But he's earlier in this podcast, I'm assuming you will listen to it. He's kind of claiming, creative control of the podcast now. All the features and stuff apparently are his ideas.
Well, in fairness, obviously Ryan's been away in Barbados and other places, hasn't he, for a few weeks? So maybe he's trying to muscle in there. I don't know.
Well, he's got big shoes to fill there. He's got big shoes to fill there. But to be fair, we're experienced boy, as he was known for about 30 seconds. But apparently people do refer to him as that now, because simply by the fact that you referred to him as, he has come into his own. I think if we were doing, I feel like I'm talking to his parents actually on school.
It's like a school report.
I feel like we're going through a school report. He's done very well, which is why we brought him back, obviously to talk to you, because I've spoke to you before and I love catching up with you. But, Jack is, if Ryan doesn't know it, then Jack knows it, which is quite a nice position to be in, because I know nothing. I think it's fair to say I can press a few buttons and I can put podcasts together, that's about it. But one thing I do know is you had a phenomenal weekend in the old I-20.
Yes, yeah, I mean obviously Rally Sardinia just finished and it got off to a good start actually. We were fourth quickest on the short super special to start the event, but then it all kind of fell apart just soon after that. The next morning, warming up the tyres for the first stage of the loop, we actually broke a prop shaft. So we were kind of sat there thinking, four stages, all with front wheel drive. It's going to be a long day.
Yeah.
It didn't start quite as we had envisaged, but managed to get ourselves through. The boys did a fantastic job fixing the car up and just sort of had to take the experience really on Friday. Having missed seeing the stages at full pace on the first run, you're always slightly handicapped. So it was almost like a bit of a race within a race, really. There was ourselves, Eric Camerley and Lorenzo Bertelli had all had transmission issues and sort of hadn't seen the stages at full tilt. So we were almost looking at their times more than anything else on Friday afternoon. But then, Saturday morning sort of hit the reset button and slightly different tyre strategy due to our position on the road, and it worked wonders because we got our first stage win on the first stage of the day. So that was a massive kind of massive moment for us, really. Obviously, you get to this level and realise, wow, everyone's operating on such a different level to what you've been used to before. So to kind of make that step and get a stage win was fantastic. Then a few more problems throughout the rest of that day with the puncture and a gearbox, but we managed to bag another second pass this time. It was a fantastic Saturday, really. And then on to Sunday. Sorry, I'm telling you all this story, aren't I? I haven't even asked the question.
I want to hear about it. I want to hear about it.
Then on to Sunday. It was only a short day to finish the rally, but we were, because we dropped some time previously, we were actually running third on the road. So lots of loose gravel to sweep away, but I won't complain like Mr. Ogier does, don't worry. So obviously you had sort of a change our strategy slightly, but it was quite, found it a bit difficult to get into the rhythm actually, because we'd done the last sort of 70 kilometres almost at fast recce pace because we were nursing the car with this gearbox issue. So just took the sort of the first run through the stages to get back up to speed. And again, with a slightly different tyre strategy, we thought, right, power stage, it's time for a bit of a push, see what we can do. Because as I'm sure you saw on the pictures, it was an incredibly scenic and brilliant looking stage. But the surface was very, very soft. Lots of deep ruts and sand. And
I think we've seen that. I think definitely on the start of the power stage, I was staggered by seeing the cars pretty much sink down onto the sump cards, which is something I don't believe I've seen on, you know, certainly for the you know, you guys running at the very, very, very pinnacle of a WRC event. See cars kind of sat on the sump card on a start line. It's tantamount to a kind of like a national event where it possibly had 4 to 5 runs through the same stage.
Yeah, it was bizarre, really, how, we've watched the power stage back ourselves since and spotted, it's only Danny Sordo, actually, who started cleverly outside the ruts. Everyone else, like you say, moved forward and clunk, dropped right down into them. But it was only a short stage, just over 6 kilometres, but it was pretty intense, all the stuff that was going on, lots of, as typifies Sardinia really, lots of short blind corners, narrow sections with rocks to catch you out. And then obviously you got to this section down towards the beach and it was like playing on the beach. You know, it was in deep, deep sand. And we knew we could have a bit of a go, and obviously you try your best, but you're never quite sure how it's going to pan out. And and then got to the end. Okay, we knew we'd be faster than Valeri Gorban and Yazid Al-Raji ahead of us, but then it's a bit of a new experience for us, really. Pulled into the power stage podium at the end and get directed, oh, go and stand and watch this TV. Fair enough. And obviously there we are thinking, oh, okay, splits looking good there, looking good. And no, they're slower. I think, oh, all right, hang on, we could be on for something here. And then it was only I think it was three cars to go. We were still fastest. So you think, right, okay. And then Sebastien Ogier came through, was 1.8 seconds up on the splits. You think, ah, okay. But then he got to this really tight hairpin left, had to bang it in reverse. And we thought, ooh, maybe there's a chance here. Maybe this could be it. But with the last kilometre and a half remaining, somehow, I think it's got to be the world's fastest shift into reverse and then back into first again. He got back and just pipped us by 0.6. But then obviously after that, Yari Matti and Thierry came through with a slower time. So yeah, second position in our first WRC points. So absolutely delighted with that. Again, it's a sort of a box ticked. And even more than that, though, it is kind of a step forward for us in terms of knowing how to react in these situations, how to sort of to drive when, not that there was any pressure on us at all. That was the great thing. The team were very much supportive of us in our sort of goals for that part of the weekend. But it's a learning experience, and we took a huge amount away from the weekend, really.
I was just about to say, I know, obviously, you spoke at the top there, how unfortunate, prop shaft breaking and everything else. Obviously, does the you say the team doesn't give you a target to work to as such, but does it give you, perhaps a different view of the rally then? Are you just looking at stage times? And you mentioned about comparing stage times with other drivers and stuff like that. Is it, obviously, the overall result isn't really achievable, whether there was an overall result. Obviously, you were running in an older car anyway. I don't know what, obviously, this was all about experience for you guys, but does it kind of take you off the leash and just kind of go, okay, let's go and get some stage times?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, obviously, before the event even started, we perhaps put a bit of pressure on ourselves by having, I think we'd admit ourselves, a bit of a disaster in Portugal. It certainly didn't go to how we intended with having to go Rally 2 on the first day and almost straight away on the second day having a similar issue. We put ourselves on the back foot and put a bit of pressure to not get it a result, but just to not make any stupid mistakes in Sardinia. And I think with our position on the road being as we are not registered, not scoring points for the championship so far, we were sat right at the back of the WRC cars. And if we'd had a mechanical problem-free run, then we may have been able to trouble the top six or something. But once the prop broke and we were hampered with that, that went out the window. So you have got to just readjust your targets, really. And I think, like I said, there's an element of looking at stage times relative to who's around you. And there's also, obviously on Saturday morning, knowing that we could perhaps push for a good overall stage placing. And I don't think we quite expected to get the stage win at that point, but you just drive your own rally and that was a result. So that was obviously very encouraging. And then beyond that, the team were just pleased with how we were showing the pace when we had a clean run, really. They certainly weren't telling us, right, you've got to aim for this. It's just do what you feel comfortable with the thing in mind, of course, of still trying not to make any errors.
Fantastic. This is the quietest, by the way, that Jack Bengian's been in all of his life.
All right, Terry, all right.
So, Jack, I know you chomping at the bit there. I know you're desperate to speak to Seb as well. Seb's just been telling his tale of his weekend. Over to you, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like after how well you did at the circuit, Sam, I feel like you should be asking me questions rather than me asking you, but there you go.
I will save that for the extra podcast later.
Yeah, exactly. For the listeners at home, I guess something that really interests me about you and Kevin is your note system. And, I've watched a few of your onboards from I think there's one from EatPro a couple of years ago, isn't there? It's quite popular on YouTube. But I guess some of the viewers at home, listeners at home even, maybe used to sort of three right, four left, that sort of thing. Tell us a little bit about how you put Kevin's notes together, because it's a little bit different to what maybe a lot of the other drivers use, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Crikey. I mean, this could take a while, actually. basically, obviously, since I've worked with Kevin since the start of 2014, we've had the same sort of basic structure of notes system, but it has, as most people's systems do, evolve slightly. But fundamentally, that one of the best ways to describe it is if you look at an analog clock, you've got obviously 1 o'clock on the watch on the clock face for us is a 10. So if you have a right 10, it'd be the angle of 1 o'clock. If you see what that means, then we can have anything faster than that would be like a slight. And anything slower, it might, if it's just slightly tight, it might be like an 11 or a 12. Now, that's not to say we use every single number between 1 and 6. You know, like a hairpin, a really tight hairpin right would be a right 60 for us. A square right would be like a right 30. But we don't use every single number in between. That's, you know, that would be impossible to work out. But it's more, you know, as you'll, a lot of people sort of discover as they develop their notes, the slow corners, there's not so much of a difference needed in describing them. It's all sort of the medium speed stuff. So for us, if you're watching sort of some onboards from the last weekend, you'll hear lots of notes between 10 and probably 15 in Sardinia, because it was quite a slow, well, medium technical rally. And so this is now loosely related to gears in Kevin's mind, but it's not kind of a hard and fast system in that sense. And then there's other sort of variations will have speed with them. A lot of people ask me, well, what is it you're saying after the corner if it's really fast? And it's actually affond, which is French for flat. Basically, obviously, Kevin being Dutch but using English notes, we wanted a note, a word that he could sort of process and hear clearly. And we both decided that was the best one. So, yeah, I have a bit of French, bit of English. But this is sort of our, you know, keep it pinned, go as fast as you can. Then there's also bits like we'll have slow for certain corners if it's braking for other parts. And yeah, that's very sort of quick basis of how the angles of the corner work. And then, of course, as with everyone else, there's adjustments for distances and opens, tightens, and all the usual sort of extras you tend to add in.
Fantastic.
Incredible. It must be a real sensory overload. I bet Tony Simpson won't be able to compute notes that quickly.
I couldn't compute them there, I'll be honest with you. I just drew a clock face on the pad in front of me just so I could keep up with the conversation.
Well, it's one of those things, Tony. Have a watch on WRC Plus on some of the stages there, and you initially you look at it and think, how on earth does this work? But it's one of those, it just somehow does. It clicks into place, and as you say, there's quite a lot of words in there for me to say, so I'm fairly rattling them off. But it's a unique system. I've never come across anyone else using it like that. But as everyone always says, you know, it doesn't matter what it means, what it is, it's what it means to you, isn't it?
There's two things that spring to mind. We had Brendan Reeves on the other week, and he came up with this lovely way of kind of saying that the notes are basically painting a picture in the driver's head, which I kind of quite like that. It's painting a picture of what the stage is coming up. And also a guy I know in radio said this thing once that, and I suppose it does apply to pace notes. It's not what you say on radio, it's what the listener hears. And it's a kind of both things kind of work in the same way, is that it's what Kevin is hearing from what you're saying, isn't it? That's ultimately what it is. So if it makes sense to him, it doesn't matter whether you be speaking in Dutch, French, German, or a mix of all those things and doing it backwards. If it works for him and that's what makes him drive quick, then you're going to do it. Have we lost Seb?
Looks like it.
It was all going so well, wasn't it? It was all going.
Pulled himself.
Do you know what? We have this thing. Obviously, we've had this thing today where we've lost people during the course of conversations and stuff like that. And all being well, as I say, we'll try and get Seb back. But do you know what? I'd not watched the Inca. So for you to.
Have a watch of that, because the one I've seen. I mean, me and Seb were chatting briefly at the circuit line, obviously, while we were there, and I told him that I'd watched one of the 207 E16R5 onboards meet for a couple of years ago, and while watching how quick Kevin is on that video, which you can see for yourself if you go and watch it on YouTube. It's quite easy to Google. You can hear lots of strange numbers, and to me, like a 50, for example, would be a distance, not a corner number. So when you're trying to, if you don't know that note system, you're trying to compute what is going on in the car, it's quite difficult to get your head around. But once Seb explains it and you actually watch it, you can actually get a handle of it. It's quite consistent.
Oh, that's a fantastic. Again, I'm going to go and have a look at. I do love WRC Plus. I do love what it brings, but unfortunately, we're struggling to get Seb back now. I wanted to get him back before we got to the end of the podcast. Maybe he might be there any second, all being well, because we have had this problem with the. For some reason with Skype, we're always at the mercy of Skype, and of course we used to have all these issues back in the day of when we were going live, but the beauty of doing podcasts, we do record as live, in case you're ever wondering, and as I say, we try and do this as live and then put it out there, but sometimes we do go again, as we found out the other week, of course, when I had to re-record a complete podcast, which I'm not prepared to do again before anybody asks. But
I remind you about that in a while. I'm glad you brought it up yourself. I didn't need to do it for you.
I know you've been. I wouldn't put it past you to just kind of drop it in there when all technical things go wrong. I wouldn't put it past you to drop me in it. So I'm going to see whether we can get Seb back one last time before he disappears on us completely, and see whether we can do that anyway. But you've been fortunate enough to do any other business, of course, so we can't even call upon you to do your any other business at the moment, but please don't go back to calendars. Let's not go back to calendars. Calendars.
We could be there all day.
We could, because everybody's going to have an opinion on calendars. That's the thing.
Of course they are. It's excellent. And, good topic of conversation to have, because everyone, like you say, everyone's got their own opinion on
what it is. Everybody's got and as I say, the big fear I always have is that we always want to go back to places that we know, and because Safari and Monty and all those, which are amazing classic events, but there was a reason why the sport has changed, and we need to be engaging other people, but still, there you go. Anyway, unfortunately we can't get Seb back, so I think we wish Seb all the very best, and I'll drop him a little message to thank him anyway, we'll get him back another time, and maybe we'll talk more about his note system then, but still, there you go. Thank you for the download, folks. You know where we live, @absolute_rally, of course. Send us a tweet there, get involved in this thing about the calendars as well, and if you've not found us already, facebook.com/absoluterally, and we'll be back same time, same place next week. Jack, thanks again, mate. Talk to you next week.
No problem. See you next week. Thanks so much.